Fondation Radio. Our society has been wrecked by economic improprieties, political maneuvers, moral decadence, and debasing sociocultural practices. In the face of these vices, which have kept our society at the brink of collapse, constructive information remains the deal breaker. Join our formidable team of reporters on News Extra with incisive investigative reporting and analysis tailored to reshape our society and give it a moral face. News Extra is a production of the news service of Foundation Radio that uncovers striking societal concerns and demystifies them. Get the deepest understanding about economic, political, and sociocultural issues in News Extra. News Extra, your window to constructive criticism. Fondation Radio.
Hello there. Welcome to this week's edition of News Extra on Foundation Radio FM 100. We are broadcasting from Bamenda in the northwest region of Cameroon. News Extra is a cocktail of news, interviews, commentaries, and analysis. For presentation, I am Mokun Johnny Nelson. Stay tuned. Constitutionally, President Paul Biya has the mandate to stand for any presidential elections in Cameroon for long as he wants and no matter how old he may be. However, having been in power for 34 long years, either his countrymen are not satisfied with his stewardship or are just bored seeing that face and hearing that name over and over again. This may explain why speculations have not stopped spreading and trending on his possible successor. Successor? Has Mr. Biya suddenly become a monarch? Well, monarchs reign forever and ever. In any case, elections, succession, or appointment, someone has to take over from Mr. Biya someday. And there is this debate whether an Anglophone can be president of Cameroon someday. Take the 1992 presidential elections, widely believed to have been won by Ni John Frundi, an Anglophone candidate who contested on the SDF ticket. Frundi obtained his highest scores from predominantly Francophone provinces. Cameroonians are now more fair-minded. They increasingly view the country's cultural diversity as well as its bilingualism as key assets that could project this country onto the world stage. This is News Extra on Foundation Radio. In order that we are all on the same news wavelength, Lem Sandra Fomujang now reminds us of some of the major happenings of the week in News Extra's Week in Retrospect.
In the region, Mumbakwet Victor Yewo was appointed new regional delegate for secondary education and replaces Sunjo George, who goes on retirement. The production and issuance of the new computerized identity cards and other related documents have been launched. Therefore, persons of the region can visit the stipulated police stations for the acquisition of these documents. Out of the region, drugs for the treatment of different types of hepatitis are available in some hospitals in Yaoundé and Douala and will soon be moved to other towns where distribution centers will be created. Those living with HIV and AIDS and hepatitis will receive treatment for free. A new method of preventing the malaria parasite has been launched in Maroua and targets children from 3 months to 5 years of age. A convention to provide free medical assistance to the over 300,000 refugees living in Cameroon has been signed between the Cameroon government and the UN's High Commission for Refugees. The United Nations will support 70% of the bills and the Cameroon government the remaining 30%. Parents have been assured by the Minister of Trade, Luc Magua Atangana, that prices of textbooks for the 2016-2017 academic year shall witness no increase. The maximum prices of all textbooks has thus been stated. Cameroon joined the African continent in celebrating the 5th Africa Day for Decentralization, Local Governance and Local Development, wherein women called for better representation in local leadership positions in local councils. The first ever international forum to enhance the production of cocoa and coffee in Cameroon ended in Yaoundé, wherein the Minister of Trade, Luc Magua Atangana, called on the youth to come up with better initiatives in order to boost production. The tourism sector of the Far North region will soon be revamped, according to Minister Belobuba Maigari of Tourism and Leisure. The region witnessed a fall in this sector as a result of the Boko Haram insurgency, thus losing lots of revenue. Out of Cameroon, South Africa has regained the title of Africa's largest economy due to the current exchange rate that put South Africa on top because the rand has threatened against the dollar. Nigerians have reacted angrily over the arrest of a prominent news blogger, Siddiq Osman, who published allegations that the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission chairman was bullying his staff. Chad's president, Idris Deby, has been sworn in for a 5th term. He seized power in 1990 and has been in office ever since then. An opposition coalition called for people to stay at home, describing it as a day of national mourning. About 10 people have lost their lives in the Central African Republic to cholera. The epidemic has ripped through parts of that country, and so medics have embarked on a campaign to draw the awareness of Central Africans to practice good hygiene habits so as to stop further spread. Republican Donald Trump has sparked anger by appearing to suggest his supporters could stop his rival, Hillary Clinton, by exercising their gun rights to stop her taking power. Also, an open letter signed by 50 Republican national security experts warned that Donald Trump would be the most reckless president in U.S. history, given he lacks the character, values, and experience to be president. In sports, the mascot of the Female African Cup of Nations to be hosted by Cameroon shall be called Lily, and the official hymn of the November Jamboree shall be done by Richard Kings and Charlotte Dipanda. Those were some of the major events that made news this week.
Lem Sandra Fomujang revisiting some of the week's news highlights. Genbo has been one of the conflict zones in the northwest region of Cameroon for as far back as one can recall. As far as the victims of these recurring conflicts are concerned, the government appears unable to take adequate measures to reconcile the antagonists and render justice to the victims. Recent tragic happenings in Genbo have not left Christopher Fogwe indifferent, as we get in the following report.
The bloody land conflicts, which have bedeviled the people of Bali and those of Meta since as far back as our German colonialists, have recently attained alarming proportions. The unscrupulous Germans armed agents from certain tribes to capture natives from neighboring villages for exploitation as forced laborers in their road projects and in coffee, palm, and cocoa plantations. The German brutal and discriminatory practices sowed the seeds of enmity, acrimony, and antagonism among the tribes that they pitted against each other to attain their colonial objectives. The British, who kicked them out of the country, did not succeed in stamping out the recriminations and animosities that have continued to fester and erupt sporadically. Gembo in the Mbengwe subdivision is one of the bloody flashpoints, among others, in the Northwest region, which have continued to erupt in the form of brutal killings, arson, destruction of crops, and other acts of man's inhumanity to man. Even as administrative and law enforcement units and judicial establishments continue to be implanted all across the territory, criminal activities related to land disputes continue to escalate, and victims of such conflicts to wallow in misery, given that our administrators seem helpless and ineffective, and even occasionally to be part of the problem rather than the solution. President Paul Biya's recent initiative to empower Cameroon youths interested in agriculture with the means to realize their dreams chose Gembo as one of the vast uncultivated stretches of land in the country on which to settle some 60 meritorious youths drawn from across the nation and supply them with the means to cut their teeth in third generation agriculture. The idea was to provide each one of them with 5 hectares of land, the very best of planting materials, tractors, and a monthly allowance to keep them viable while their crops blossomed and matured. Since 2012, they have toiled to realize their dreams, but since 2012, they have been subjected to all forms of violence by youths from neighboring villages. They have been physically brutalized, their crops and property vandalized, and right now they are in a state of tension, insecurity, and disarray, even though the forces of law and order, the administrators, and even the governor himself have intervened. Yet, trouble still looms ahead. Mr. Anyangawe Fielding, who is the vice president of President Paul Biya's Young Farmers Project in Gembo, is better placed to keep us abreast of what is currently going on in Gembo, as he recounts in the following interview.
The very first year, we had an incident.
What was it?
Where the youths of Bali came in and brought in trouble that the land belongs to them. Yes, so.
And they destroyed?
We had the first destruction, which was devastating.
The year was when?
That was way back in 2012.
2012?
Yes, the governor came there. Mm. Yes.
The and then, since then, what has happened to the people who did the destruction?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Yes, because year in, year out, they keep on coming, destroying, and no action is being taken.
2012, this is 2016.
Yes.
And it has been happening every year?
Every year.
And nothing has been done?
Nothing.
But what do the administration tell you?
They say we should be patient. Patient that they are looking for a lasting solution. That's why we had to go and block the road.
You went and blocked the road?
Yes.
In Bengwe?
And Gembo. Mm-hmm. And Gembo.
And when you blocked the road, what was the reaction of government?
Because wanted, the first thing is that wanted the information to go wide. Because from all indications, it shows that all the letters that we have been writing, they have been stuck somewhere.
Okay, tell me the nature of the different times when you have been aggressed, and especially the one that has been done recently.
At times, it's emotional for me to talk when I reflect on the incidents.
Please,
because you see,
let people who are listening to us know exactly how it happened.
Because you will not believe that youths, unarmed youths, they are being chased by people with guns. You can imagine. So even right now that I'm talking here like this, we don't go to the farm because of fear of the unknown.
Yes, that decrees most often the administration is accused to take interest in such skirmishes. For what reason, one is yet to understand. A few weeks ago, the director of the Advanced School of Administration and Magistracy, Enam Linus Tusum Mejema, was hailed for his fight against corruption in the institution. This followed the dismissal of five students who were caught cheating during the promotion exams. But it seems the Enam authorities may fall in their own anti-corruption drag net, as a recent corruption scandal seems to have erupted following the publication of the results of the competitive entrance examination into that hitherto prestigious institution. Lanzo Vela.
Entrance exams into some professional schools are often reportedly marred by corruption. Over the years, the cankerworm of corruption has kept its ugly head stuck in the conduct of administrative competitive examinations into professional schools, which usually open the doors to permanent, decent and more secure jobs in various departments of the civil service. As Cameroonians scramble for the few places usually put up for such schools spread around the country, survival of the smartest in corrupt practices has strangely become the virtue, while merit is the exemption. Tales and experiences abound in Cameroon as to how much is given in bribe by candidates in administrative competitive examinations to succeed. More so, another ugly form of corruption called influence peddling is used by some influential state personalities, corporate and political heavyweights to oblige examination organizers to include the names of their candidates whether the latter sat for the examination or not, and no matter their performance. The latest in a series of such malpractices is one of Enam that has gone viral, especially on social media. Cameroonians have been thrown a curveball as news broke out that a candidate by name Atangana Joseph Yannick featured in the list of successful candidates in both the economics and finance section and general administration section of the National School of Administration and Magistracy in what those who sat for the said exams have argued is unimaginable, given that both sections of the examination took place simultaneously. Even though public exam corruption knows Cameroon by name, this latest one that has rocked Enam proves that this ailing practice has transcended limits, not only because a candidate is succeeding in an exam he never sat, but because the institution involved should normally have a strong repelling force against such vices. How would one expect this irksome cycle to be broken if a Enam that is designed to churn out administrators has warmly embraced a misdeed the said administrators ought to combat? This phenomenon has grown out of proportion, no doubt, explaining why so many shades of opinion increasingly cast doubts on the country's system of administrative competitive examinations. The level of credibility has dropped to the extent that many blame corruption in examinations for professional insensitivity, incompetence, and malpractices observed amongst a growing number of public servants today. This leaves us wondering what truly is wrong with Cameroon.
For how long shall we keep on decrying such malpractices? Little wonder most Enam-trained administrators are in jail for corruption. After years of hesitation, Cameroon finally ratified the Economic Partnership Agreement, APE, with the European Union. Already, there are fears that such a deal will be more beneficial to European countries, partly because Cameroonians may not take advantage of it due to ignorance. In the following analysis, Ranibel Sato brings to light some of the clauses and attempts to explain why Cameroonians are yet to fully benefit from such agreements.
In the year 2009, Cameroon, alongside other eligible sub-Saharan African countries, ratified a business and economic agreement called the Economic Partnership Agreement, EPA. This agreement was to ensure a sustainable guarantee of free access of products originating from Cameroon into European markets. It was equally a means of fostering trade in Cameroon and the diversification of its economic activities. According to the EU Commissioner for Trade, the Economic Partnership Agreement, EPA, was to usher a new era in relations between the EU and Central Africa. The EPA is said to be one of the main cooperation tools to provide assistance to developing countries such as Cameroon in expanding their economies. This interim economic partnership provides for duty and quota-free access into the European market exports from Cameroon. Cameroon, for its part, will gradually open its market to European imports over a transitional period set to run until 2023. However, a number of products will be exempted from the scheme in order to ensure the protection of Cameroon's agricultural markets and industries which it regards as sensitive. The Economic Partnership Agreement could potentially go beyond trade in goods and equally cover services and investments, trade-related fields such as sustainable development, competition, trade facilitation, and transparency in procurement. These subjects are included in the Interim Economic Partnership Agreement as clauses which provide for them to be negotiated at a later stage. However, economic analysts in Bamenda say the partnership agreement, which was intended to boost economic activities and trading ties between Cameroon and the European Union, is instead beneficial to the European Union more than Cameroon. This, they say, is because Cameroonians do not easily embrace new ideas and opportunities as a result of not being current. Mr. Akenji Claude Viste is the Dean of Studies at Step by Step High School Mankan and an economics teacher and analyst.
It's practical in the sense that the trade barriers have been removed between Cameroon and the European Union, and equally it was going to encourage trade between these two countries. It's in the sense that the cost of importing and exporting will now be reduced. Little or no Cameroonians, the number of Cameroonians that know about this opportunity, they are not aware. Mm-hmm. Because most Cameroonians don't listen to the news, they don't listen to the radio. All what they do is they are watching films. So we need to educate Cameroonians to always listen to news or even read newspapers. Because most of these things are found on the newspapers. Yes. The negative effect on Cameroon is that since Cameroon depend more on import from manufactured goods, it will result to capital flight because there are no industries in Cameroon that can enable Cameroonians to transform their raw materials and use them and consume. But since we depend more on import from the European Union or from other countries, the Cameroon economy is now running at a deficit.
He equally says the agreement, if implemented, will gradually improve on the economy of Cameroon that widely depends on import due to the absence of processing industries in the country.
Well, as far as the agreement is concerned, even though of the disadvantages that Cameroon is experiencing, Cameroon is equally gaining on the other hand because it enabled the Cameroon economy to now export their raw materials, and which when they export, it will enable the country to receive revenue because exports are considered as inflow of currency, while imports will lead to an outflow of currency. And exports, in economic terms, we call them injections, and imports are withdrawals.
Worth mentioning is the fact that in Central Africa, Cameroon is the EU's leading trade partner for both the country's imports accounting for 35% and exports 46%. The EU's main exports to Cameroon are industrial goods such as vehicles, chemical products and machines. Meanwhile, Cameroonians' main exports are coffee, cocoa, banana, and rubber, as well as processed products such as fruits, vegetable and cocoa-based products. Politically too, the European Union maintains bilateral discussions with the Cameroonian authorities, including biannual formal political dialogues and other different meetings covering a wide variety of political issues, including human rights, the rule of law, democracy, and regional security, especially against the terrorist sect Boko Haram. In addition, the EU is regularly exchanging with representatives of political parties as well as civil society organizations in the country. Apart from the EPA, Cameroon is also a signatory to the EU-ACP Partnership Agreement, the African Intellectual Property Organization, or API, the African Export-Import Afrimex Bank, the Organization for the Harmonization of Business Law in Africa, OHADA, the Inter-African Conference on Insurance Markets, CIMA, the Inter-African Conference on Social Welfare, CPRES, the Economic and Statistical Observatory for Sub-Saharan Africa, AFRISTAT, and the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA.
Yes, Sato, like most bilateral and multilateral agreements, let's hope this latest one will be exploited to the benefit of Cameroonians. On September 2014, a special event was held at the United Nations headquarters in New York to launch a He for She campaign. The campaign is a solidarity campaign for gender equality. When it was launched, the intention was to engage 1 million men by July 2015. This was not met. Cameroon joined the caravan on Thursday, August 11, when Prime Minister Philemon Yang launched the campaign in Yaoundé. Comfort Musa is a female activist and coordinator of Sister Speak 237. The following interview was done on phone, so the quality may not be the best. I started by asking Comfort Musa if the Cameroon government had enough political will to promote gender equality.
The fact that the government has launched the He for She campaign shows that at some level there is that will to fight and to catch up with global strength, because the He for She campaign is a global solidarity movement for gender equality, and any government tries to identify with the strength. The challenge now comes in when we want to look at practical implementation. The government of Cameroon has been very proactive when it comes to cutting off with false friends, but we don't fight the political will when it comes to implementing the treaty that they signed and ratified. So on paper it looks good, but when you look at the realities of the average Cameroonian woman, we still do not feel the impact of all these innovations that we're seeing in government and the practical implementations of programs like the He for She campaign that the government was involved in this.
Okay. Now, the United Nations launched this campaign in September 2014, about 20 years after the Beijing Declaration for Gender Equality. Can one assume that the Beijing Declaration, just like the Millennium Development Goals, MDGs, was mere paperwork?
I won't be quick to say that it was mere paperwork, because the truth is, when you look at the Beijing Declaration and all the important global movements and conferences that have created a lot of buzz and talk about women's equality, you will see that even if we are not where we really want to be, we are not where we used to be. So I will not dismiss it as mere paperwork. We've come a long way. There's still more ground to cover. And that is why we will keep having evolution, and we keep looking back to say, 20 years after this, where are we? What have we done? What needs to be done? Like I always say, and like other activists and advocates for women's rights will say, we live in patriarchal societies, and it takes more than one conference to unpack patriarchy. It takes more than one universal declaration to change a system that has been in place for thousands of years. Women's empowerment is a daily drive. Contracting patriarchy is something we see every day. So it's not paperwork. There is too much work to be done, and I'm confident that we are on the right path. The government and the advocates are on the right path.
Okay, now, but where do you think the problem lies essentially? The men or the women or those are supposed to implement some of these policies?
The problem lies on the men and women. That's why I like the People She campaign. Because gender equality is not a women's issue. Men comprise half of Cameroon's population, for example. And so it's vital that men and women work together to end inequalities and human rights violations. And so I won't apportion blame to a specific gender. We need to harness the responsibility of the men and the women as well in the gender equality agenda as we spread awareness and inspire action that eliminates discrimination against women and girls.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Yes, Komi Musa, gender equality is not only a women's affair. The practice of female genital mutilation, FGM, is just caring as one can imagine. Strangely, some of our communities still practice it. In this week's edition of Situation Room, Randy Josa joins the campaign against female genital mutilation in this write-up, Touch Not My Clitoris.
Welcome to Situation Room with Randy Josa. In this edition, Touch Not Her Clitoris, The Law Is Watching. The clitoris is the sacred flower of a woman. It gives her beauty of the heart. It's her joystick. And with it, she blossoms with libido and enjoyable lovemaking. So take it away, and you have forever killed her libido, her desire, and God-given right to make love. Talk less of reaching orgasm. At worst, it will fill her with bitterness, frustration, and emptiness. Nothing will ever again excite her in terms of sexual intercourse. Without a clitoris, the woman simply becomes a mere flesh machine for the man. Oh yes, the man will have sex with his wife for pleasure or for procreation, anytime he wants. But for the woman, sex with her husband or lover simply becomes a routine or ritual void of emotions, to give the man whatever he wants, but deep inside her, she is empty. Unfortunately, this is exactly what has been happening to 20% of our women. Their clitorises are being chopped off in village rituals to keep them clean, maintain their virginity, prepare them for marriage, and ensure that they are faithful to their husbands. In communities where female genital mutilation is practiced, like the Ejagam in the southwest region and parts of northern Cameroon, up to 60% of women have been mutilated. Even in urban areas where Muslims are settled, like Briketeri neighborhoods in Yaoundé, virtually every baby is mutilated when they are just 6 days old, and it's the men who perform the cutting. In Ejagam, the girls are mutilated in a ritual called Nkim. Their clitoris and parts of their sexual organs are removed before they reach puberty. Nkim is meant to initiate the girl into womanhood. The people also believe that by mutilating their sex organs, the women's libido or sexual desire will be controlled, and she will never contemplate committing adultery or sex outside marriage. A painful and primitive cultural practice. Female circumcision is such a painful exercise that only the victims can truly know the agony they endure. It happened to three little girls in Ogurang village recently. It was a cool day, and the chief had given his authorization for the nkem to hold. It takes place in open air, behind a hut with bushy surroundings. So many hands are pinning down one of the girls on banana leaves, her legs spread out. The woman in charge ignores her yelling. K
carefully slicing off her clitoris with a homemade knife, and this without anesthesia. The woman looks worried as blood pumps out of her. One of them is trying to stop it by applying pressure to the wound with special herbs from a clay pot. She seems to succeed, and the girl, still weeping, is carried away to a fattening room. Two more cuttings will take place without the tools being sterilized. Comfort Effiom, president of the Inter-African Committee on Harmful Traditional Practices Affecting the Health of Women and Children, has seen what female circumcision does to women. She says, there are cases where some of the girls bleed to death, and they hardly take these girls to hospitals because they think they can treat it. In some cases, they even remove everything, the labia and the labia minora. In other cases, they would stitch them and just leave a little hole for urine and menstrual flow, she says. Sometimes, because of that, the stomach swells because not everything can be evacuated. It swells and they would think you are pregnant. Sometimes you develop infections. I have seen where little girls who've been circumcised have developed keloids or swellings, and it can swell until it can cover the organs of the girl. And come to think of it, FGMs, or female genital mutilation, is business. Campaigners have for decades been persuading villagers to stop this harmful traditional practice, but theirs has been an uphill task. On one occasion, they confronted a village chief with hundreds of villagers watching and listening with rapt attention. It's a business for us, the chief says. That is how I earn my living with my wife and children. Look, even tomorrow, I will still do it. We shall cut some girls tomorrow if you want. You can come and see. This practice can't go away. The girl will come and stay with me for 3 years. She will dance every time people come to see her, and they will dash her money, which we can buy soap and kerosene with. If you stop this practice, how will I live with my wife and children? Clearly, these are the sentiments of a man who's not been cut without anesthesia and disfigured for life. Thank goodness, the new law just promulgated punishing female genital mutilation will take down such people. Section 2777, sub 1 of the Criminal Procedure Code states that whoever mutilates the genital organ of a person by any means whatsoever shall be punished with imprisonment from 10 to 20 years. The perpetrator will be jailed for life if he is found to be doing it habitually or for commercial purposes, or leads to death of the victim. Before I came into the Situation Room, female circumcision was still being practiced in enclaved areas in the country. In fact, if people in the cities have not all heard about the new law on FGMs, what more of people in the rural enclaved areas where radio signals or cars do not reach? Surely, it will take more than the law to change these age-old attitudes. I have been Randy Josaa. See you next week with another edition of Situation Room.
Hope those involved in such misdeeds will let go such obnoxious practices.
There are people who can walk away from you. And hear me when I tell you this. When people can walk away from you, let them walk. I don't want you to try to walk another person into staying with you, loving you, calling you, caring about you, coming to see you, staying attached to you. I mean, hang up the phone. When people can walk away from you, let them walk. Your destiny is never tied to anybody that left. The Bible said that they came out from us that it might be made manifest that they were not for us. For had they been of us, no doubt they would have continued with us. People leave because they are not joined to you. And if they are not joined to you, you can't make them stay. Let them go. And it doesn't mean that they are a bad person. It just means that their part in the story is over. And you've got to know when people's part in your story is over so that you don't keep trying to raise the dead. You've got to know when it's dead. You've got to know when it's over. Let me tell you something. I've got the gift of goodbye. It's the 10th spiritual gift. I believe in goodbye. It's not that I'm hateful. It's that I'm faithful. And I know whatever God means for me to have, He'll give it to me. And if it takes too much sweat, I don't need it. Stop begging people to stay. Let them go. If you're holding onto something that doesn't belong to you and was never intended for your life, then you need to let it go. If you're holding onto past hurts and pains, let it go. If someone can't treat you right, love you back, and see your worth, let it go. If someone has angered you, let it go. If you're holding on to some thoughts of evil and revenge, let it go. If you're involved in a wrong relationship or addiction, let it go. If you're holding on to a job that no longer meets your needs or talents, let it go. If you have a bad attitude, let it go. If you keep judging others to make yourself feel better, let it go. If you're stuck in the past and God is trying to take you to a new level in Him, let it go. If you're struggling with the healing of a broken relationship, let it go. If you keep trying to help people who won't even try to help themselves, let it go. If you're feeling depressed and stressed, let it go. If there is a particular situation that you are so used to handling yourself and God is saying, take your hands off it, then you need to let it go. Let the past be the past. Forget the former things. God is doing a new thing for you. Let it go. Get right, get left. Think about it and then let it go. The battle is the Lord's. Next, stop and think and appreciate God's power in your life for doing what you know is pleasing to Him. Yes, I love my God. He is my fountain of life and my Savior. He keeps me going day and night. Without Him, I am no one. But with Him, I can do everything. Christ is my strength. This is a simple test. If you love God and you are not ashamed of all the great things that He has done for you, send this to everyone you know. God loves you and watches over you every day.
You are listening to News Extra on Foundation Radio. We are broadcasting from Bamenda in the northwest region of Cameroon. I am Mokun Johnny Nelson, anchoring. Is Cameroon's oil wealth a curse or a blessing? Our free thinker, Tapang Ivo Tanku, Fulbright scholar on security issues in the United States of America, in today's The Free Thinker, suspects that while the fuel may just be fueling the treasuries, they may also be filling Cameroon.
On April 8, I put up a Facebook post of a ruined classroom for pupils in Cameroon, as initially reported by Jean-Marc Soboff. Among the scores of comments was one intriguing, enriching, and thought-provoking comment by Kien Aid, a Cameroonian Facebook user. Kien's allusion to the concept of petrostate, the case of Cameroon, inspired this write-up. He explained that a petrostate, as you call it, lacks basic infrastructure because petrol is relatively cheap on the market. We should not be carried away by petrol, he said, adding that we can do without it. In fact, Cameroon is one of the Gulf of Guinea's member states and heavily depends on petrol revenue to run its affairs. Since 1955, when the first oil and gas was discovered, a curse has been hovering over the country, and even traditional herbalists nor the fun of funds are unable to break the curse. I will explain. I am a critic of resource curse, a widely applied concept in security studies. It loosely posits that countries with abundant natural resource wealth are less developed and badly governed. This can also be referred to as the paradox of plenty. I argue that resource curse varies from country to country and does not have an impact on the country's polity or economy. Norway, Botswana and Indonesia are the three countries that quickly come to mind when we talk about well-governed petrol states or natural resource-rich states. This is not to say it is a blessing, destiny, nor a curse. The bottom line is that the quality of the institutions prior to the discovery of the oil matters a whole lot. Cameroon has had failed institutions before the natural wealth was discovered in 1955 and production started only in 1978. Its over-reliance on oil and gas is fueling the private treasuries and failing the nation. The country suffers from a Dutch disease, a resource extraction-led economy that ignores agriculture and other income-generating life savers. Research shows that 80% of Cameroon's economic boom rests on agriculture alone. Yet, despite more than half a century of extracting petrol, the economy is still mired in 4.6% annual economic growth rate. Fluctuations in oil prices, astronomic unemployment, and underemployment are some of the factors that should dissuade Cameroon from its oil and gas reliance. And this is driving the country crazy. Since the US launched its endless global war on terror in the Middle East, the Gulf of Guinea has become a huge strategic importance for petrol and gas-thirsty clients like US, China, India, France, UK, South Korea, and the list goes on. According to the American Petroleum Index, our oil contains the lowest percentage of sulfur, making it outstanding to quench Western thirst. It is deep offshore, far away from conflicts. Its routes are safer and closer to Western and Asian markets. Most often, the oil contracts are appealing to clients who fail to uphold international standards. And because most of the deals are dubious, Cameroon sees no need to publish the oil revenues to its citizens. There are no checks and balances, although the country signed up to the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, EITI. Publish What You Pay, Global Witness are some of the credible institutions that have been holding the Gulf of Guinea member states to account to its citizens for every deal with oil, gas and mineral clients. And sad enough, because Cameroon derives a high proportion of revenues from rents, that is, unearned income, it barely levies the tax on its citizens and so owe no accountability to them. In countries where citizens are well taxed, democratic accountability breathes and citizens scrutinize state expenditure. This rentier state approach is failing Cameroon. Besides, unlike in Norway, where 96% of oil rents are saved for future generations, this cannot be a dream in Cameroon. There is an expansive spending spree, and oil rents are dropping like manna from heaven and being transformed into a money distribution bazaar. Here are my plausible solutions. It may appear that there is a jinx in the oil in Africa preventing countries from democratizing governance. In 2010, Ghana was considered a middle-income country and a democracy by Western barometers. Those qualities long died shortly before a substantial amount of oil was discovered in the English-speaking West African country. A petroleum data set obtained from the Correlates of War database in 2007 revealed that if Cameroon maintains its extraction of 76.9 barrels of oil daily, it would deplete all its oil revenues in 7.1 years. What in the world? This is stunning, unacceptable, and unpalatable. What will Cameroon show for its future generations as proceeds of its oil wealth when all must have finished? It is time for Cameroon to diversify its markets and roll out protectionism policies, limiting the importation of goods and services that kill local capacities and industries. The dubious Economic Partnership Agreement, also known as EPA, with the EU readily comes to mind. We should prioritize mechanized agriculture and hold leaders accountable for all oil, gas, and mineral revenues. My name is Tapang Ivo. Tanku. The free thinker.
Ivo, we hope someone took note of your proposed solutions. Makebe Dreadroot ASMAC students on internship shall be reading letters from our listeners after this transition. The first letter comes from Mulu God's Gift from Abango, and he comes back on this issue of Bamenda fast becoming an eyesore.
Dear News Extra, even though it's been said before, nothing has been done to remedy the situation. That is why I am writing with a bleeding heart to complain of refuge dumping. One will find it difficult to walk on the streets of Bamenda without the stench of refuge mixed with urine burning their eyes, especially in places with gutters. People throw dirt thinking that the rain will wash them away, and when it doesn't happen, passers-by who have cultivated the habit of taking gutters to be their personal toilet urinate and sometimes defecate on them, creating a whole new terrible smell, causing others to barely breathe the natural fresh air. Something needs to be done about this before we die of this pollutant.
Ngong Jodene of Foncha Street has this to parents of students who passed the GCE A-levels.
It's true that our children have written and passed the GCE advanced level, which introduces them to a whole new world. A world where they will start learning to be independent with no one to discipline them, teach them how to take care of themselves properly, especially those who were in the boarding school, not forgetting the ones who were day students. So, I will call on parents and guardians to advise their children on the life they will be exposed to so that they won't end up going astray from thinking university is a free zone where they can do whatever they want and go scot-free. Parents and guardians, if you had neglected to teach your child self-discipline, it's not too late. You can still do it now. Don't cry later for the consequence.
And the last letter comes from Su Bo Kijum, and she is pleading the case of handicapped students in institutions of higher learning in Cameroon.
Dear News Extract, it is true that in the primary and secondary level, persons with disabilities are generally exempted from the payment of school fees. But what about those at higher education who are also disabled? Shouldn't they also benefit from school fees exemption? The ministerial text is always on paper and not applied. That is all words, no action. Also, the disabled leaders at the academic milieu benefit from the school fees exemption, which I know helps in shutting them up not to advocate for persons with disability. That alone is very dangerous.
Keep your letters coming on our email, radio.foundation@yahoo.com, radio.foundation@yahoo.com. You can also call us or text us on any of the following numbers. For the MTN, you have 672-533-3990. And for the orange number, you have 695-568-480. And the News Extra crew shall be at your service. Wonja Leslie is here with our weekly press review.
The Nsor people are reputed for their unity in acting, but the ongoing management crisis over the Kumbo Water Authority is proving that they can be human after all. Kumbo may cede water management to Kamwata, writes Jean-Marie Ngongsong in The Rambler. The protagonists, including the Kumbo Council, the Development Association, and the traditional authorities, have been given 2 weeks to decide who should be at the helm of the Kumbo Water Authority, failing which government will make a final decision. According to the Rambler, it might just become water. Bia's laptop Lagesse is still trending in the news. The Median reports that 75 billion francs allocated for this could provide 6,000 jobs with a salary of 100,000 francs per month for 10 years. This venture, therefore, according to Justice Aya Paul, president of the People's Action Party, PAP, as quoted by the Median, is a very bad investment. Is an Anglophone the best candidate to take over from President Paul Biya? The Guardian Post of Thursday thinks so. Its publisher, Nga Christian, cites five potential candidates: Dr. Christopher Fomio, Akere Muna, Ni John Frunzi, Joshua Osi, and Cardinal Tumi as Anglophones with presidential substance. Well, with two front runners from the SDF, we may be in for a sprint in that party, as the Times Journal reports that the SDF is opening the way for another Furundi candidature in 2018. Can money buy love? This is an age-old question with no conclusive answer. But if you want to know if your partner is rather for your money, get tips in the Guardian Post of Thursday, August 8. In any case, the paper seems to conclude that cool girls always get good partners. We hope that to apply that too applies to cool guys.
Our press review there with Wunja Leslie. And now comes Lanza Vela with our weekly scoreboard that rates deeds and misdeeds of the week.
The Bamenda Regional Hospital features in our down score in this edition of the program. Like most of the other state-run health institutions, the hospital has been scandalized by an overt case of negligence. According to our sources, the hospital authorities threw out a man from the hospital on two grounds. First, that he could not afford money for his treatment, and second, that he is a madman. The man is said to have sought medical attention at the hospital after he was brutally assaulted by unknown hoodlums. It is reported that after ejecting the assaulted bike rider from the hospital, the officials only allowed him access after his colleagues protested and promised hell if they acted contrary. Popular opinion holds that health care in state-run hospitals is at its worst. The case of the Bamenda Regional Hospital makes us wonder if the newly instituted guide by the Minister of Public Health was just to heal the hearts of Cameroonians that were burnt by the Kumateke saga. We score the Bamenda Regional Hospital extremely low. We are also scoring low the Board of Directors of the Cameroon Radio Television, CRTV. The decisions arrived at after its 38th meeting were very much displeasing to Anglophones who continue to feel marginalized. Most of the appointments made were strictly in favor of the superior Francophones, as the inferior Anglophones continue to play second fiddle. Issa Chiroma Bakari and his team seem not to have found any Anglophone worthy of the juicy positions of the corporation. This has proven that Issa Chiroma is not willing to let go the proverbial Anglophone marginalization in the state media house, and that the entrant Charles Ndongo has learnt not to sing out of tune. We score the CRTV Board of Directors very, very low.
Lanza Vela, Priscilla Ninge, Lem, Sandra Fomujang, Wunja Leslie, Christopher Fogwe, Randy Bell Sato, Tapang Ivo Ntanku, and Randy Josa. Thanks a million for this special production. However, all your efforts would have been useless without the technical authority of Wingo Lawrence and Tendong Julius. Foundation Radio is the voice of the voiceless. So, if you don't want anyone to know, don't do it. I am yours, Mokun Johnny Nelson. Accept my blessed regards.